Next case for argument this morning is Bridges against Libre. Mr. Rosen.
May it please the court. This case is about improper restriction on First Amendment rights to free speech and the chilling effect that this restriction has on prisoners' ability to testify against prison authorities. In this case, Mr. Bridges filed a truthful affidavit with damaging evidence against prison staff and prison authorities. He was retaliated against for doing this. The lower court dismissed Mr. Bridges' complaint and stated that the speech here was not a matter of public concern. This is clear error, and the second reason that I'm going to discuss here today is that the application of the public concern test to a non-employee prisoner's speech is clear reversible error. The district courts incorrectly determined that the speech here was not a matter of public concern. To evaluate whether a speech is a matter of public concern, under the Connick standard, the court must look at the content, context, and the form of the speech as revealed by the entire record. In this case, looking at all three standards, all three prongs of the standard, it is clear that Mr. Bridges' speech is a matter of public concern. Looking at the content, a speech is a matter of public concern if it relates to any social or political concern to the community.
Mr. Rosenblatt, I understand why you're presenting your argument that this meets the public concern test, because there's certainly language in some opinions that would lead you in that direction. On the other hand, I think that your argument that it's not a particularly good fit for this kind of situation is an interesting one, and I guess I want to know. It seems odd to me that you prefer the Turner against Safley test, and I wonder whether, in your view, if there were a prisoner grievance about something quite personal to the prisoner, you know, you didn't deliver me some Tylenol when I needed some, or something extremely personal that wasn't a generic problem in the prison. It's just the guards didn't do that. But then they retaliate against him for using the grievance procedure. Are we talking about a First Amendment speech issue there? Are we talking about a First Amendment petition issue there? Are we talking about something that's simply they can retaliate to their heart's content as long as the prisoner's complaining about personal things? What's the right way to approach those?
Well, Your Honor, Mr. Bridges alleges both petition to redress grievances and First Amendment speech, and it would depend on the context of each case. If the Turner standard is to be applied to your situation, then under the standard in the Shaw case in the Supreme Court said that the Turner test simply does not accommodate valuations of content. In that case, the Supreme Court and the courts would not look at the content of the speech. In that case, it was a complaint about Tylenol, not receiving Tylenol. It would look at whether the speech or the petition to redress grievances is somehow inconsistent with the legitimate penological interest of the prison. That would be the balancing test involved.
So the balancing test, so as you see it, when you apply Turner, you make sure there's no penological objective that's being served by retaliating against somebody for filing an affidavit in somebody else's lawsuit. And when you find no legitimate prison interest, then you say the speech is at that point protected?
Yes, Your Honor. Okay.
Counsel, could you tell me why you're suing under the First Amendment? There are a whole bunch of federal statutes that make retaliation against a witness in a federal lawsuit illegal. Felonies, some of these provide for private rights of action. I notice your brief doesn't cite any of them. Why is this under the First Amendment and not under the, what seems to me, developed body of federal law preventing retaliation against witnesses in federal suits?
Your Honor, the pro se litigant here, Mr. Bridges, sued under 1983 here. Yeah. And alleged First Amendment retaliation.
We are not bound today by any errors made by the plaintiff pro se. One reason why we have lawyers. Right? Nor do pleadings set out or constrict legal theories. The question is, there are two possibilities, really. One is, that the kind of retaliation that's alleged here is illegal under federal law that creates a private right of action, and here we go. The second is that Congress, in specifying those things you can and can't do to a witness, has not made this kind of reaction unlawful. You can't hit a witness. You can't fire a witness. You can't, right? There's a long list of things in these statutes. But you can't move somebody from prison cell A to prison cell B is not on the list. So maybe this is perfectly lawful. But one would want to start by seeing what the federal statutes about retaliating against witnesses say. Well, wouldn't one?
Well, Your Honor, as you said, there could be two situations here. And even if this, if the conduct here is lawful under the second aspect, it is unlawful under the First Amendment, and we're here to argue about that.
Well, and also, though, I mean, I don't know that you want to limit yourself so much. One of your points is that Mr. Bridges should have been permitted to amend his complaint, and if there was something he needed to say to lay the groundwork for the theories that Judge Easterbrook is talking about, then one would imagine you might not want to close the door, should you win, to using these other theories.
Well, if Your Honors would reverse on that ground and instruct the district court to permit my client to amend the complaint, perhaps that's something that we would consider and plead under both theories.
Yeah, my question is, of course, two-edged. I take it that 1983 is not properly understood to say, and oh, by the way, here's a way to defeat a limitation intentionally written into some federal statute directly bearing on the question. If Congress says you can do A to a witness and you can't do B to a witness, it doesn't seem to me very plausible to read 1983 as implicitly repealing Clause A.
I'm not sure that Congress says that you can retaliate against a witness by filing false conduct reports, Your Honor. And that is detrimental to the prisoner in this case. And in going back to my argument, the public concern does to us see my in my rebuttal time now?
Yes.
Well, I guess I'll save my time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Rosenblatt. Ms. Sheehan.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Mary Elizabeth Sheehan, Assistant Attorney General for the State of Wisconsin, and I represent the defendant appellees in this case. We're here today to review the decision of the district.
What's the correct pronunciation of the name of your principal client?
That would be Judith Hubrichst.
Hubris?
Hubrichst.
Hubrick?
Yes.
All right.
I believe there are two main issues before the Court today. The first being whether the public concern test that's stated in Pickering versus Board of Education and Connick v. Myers should apply to the First Amendment retaliation claims of non-employee inmates. And the second question is, if it does apply, whether Mr. Bridges' speech in this case involved a matter of public concern.
It's hard for me to see how the Pickering-Connick test has the slightest thing to do with how prisons are regulating what inmates are saying. This is about government employers needing to function the way other employers do, having rules, you know, maintaining discipline in the workplace. The Supreme Court has made it pellucidly clear that these are not cases that should be brought under either 1983 or its federal equivalent. Why is that? How does that carry over to the prison system?
I believe there are several Seventh Circuit cases that have...
Yes, forget about the case. Do these cases... In fact, many of the cases are cases that say we think there was a problem with the way the prison was treating so-and-so. So they actually never reach the question, well, what if we found it was not of public concern? Would we throw it out on that basis? So I will say these cases strike me as distinguishable to agree. But forget about the case. I mean, does this body of law map particularly well in the prison situation?
I think it does, Your Honor.
Some high school teacher who wants to complain about a new project?
We're talking about restricted settings where just as it's in the interest of a government employer to regulate employee speech in certain situations, a prison setting is a very restricted and arguably difficult situation.
I don't think you're going to be able to invoke the public employer's employees' speech cases. Supreme Court relies in Garcetti against Sabalos on the fact that the employee went to work voluntarily. I don't believe Mr. Bridges is there voluntarily.
I would agree, Your Honor, but in Sassnett versus Litcher, this court did rely on Pickering specifically when it rejected a free speech claim brought by an inmate who wanted...
Judge Wood's question is that right? We need to argue this out in a straightforward way. Maybe we need to correct some of our missteps.
With due respect, Your Honors, I would say that there are several, not just one Seventh Circuit case, that has applied the public concern test to inmates.
And so my answer is still, so what? I mean, so there's Pearson versus Wellborn, for example. But in Pearson, the panel rejects the prison officials' arguments that the inmate's speech didn't invoke a matter of public concern, finds in favor of Pearson. So I can't see how Pearson tells us where the boundary at the other end is. And as Judge Easterbrook said, we actually have a procedure, our Circuit Rule 40E. If we have thrown out confusing language in prior opinions, we would like to
or incorrect that language. Brookins against Cole dismisses a prisoner's suit after finding that it didn't have a matter of public concern. But so far as I can see, both sides agree that that was the standard in Brookins. It's all too common. The lawyers for both sides use a standard. It appears in our opinion, and we later decide that the lawyers made a mistake, and we picked it up, and we can put it down again. So that's the question. Why in the world should we use that standard, which arose out of voluntary transactions, and there's nothing voluntary here?
I would definitely agree that there's nothing voluntary about being incarcerated in a state prison.
Particularly the one, the Wisconsin Secure Program facility.
that is correct, Your Honor. I still believe that we are not talking about the general speech of the public at large. And so just like
That's true, but the Supreme Court has a standard. That's Turner against Safley for prisoner speech not being the speech of the public at large. Now, I could understand an argument that this kind of speech is not subject even to Turner against Safley. If what you're dealing with is prisoner speech that is involved in litigation, there may be greater protection than that of Turner. But I don't understand the argument that there should be less.
Well, the argument is based on the fact that nothing that Mr. Bridges actually has stated has any relevance to public concern.
Well, who else would witness these things if it weren't fellow prisoners? I suppose guards would, but they're not likely to provide affidavits to prisoners or prisoners' families who bring suits.
Correct, Your Honor. However, relying on the previous case law that I've cited in my brief, the distinction in the public concern test is specific content of what is being said.
And I have to say, I didn't read Mr. Bridges' affidavit as narrowly as you did. I looked at it, and it has a fair amount of detail in it that's quite useful for, I don't know if you pronounced it Pow or Poe or Mr. Poe's survivor's lawsuits.
I think the problem is that the appellant...
Judge Tinder says, I mean, Mr. Bridges was a witness, an oral witness, if not a visual witness.
Mr. Bridges was a witness to Mr. Poe saying that he was ill and then being taken away to presumably the health services unit. There's nothing in Mr. Bridges' affidavit that discusses the fact that Mr. Poe subsequently was deceased, or that there were allegations against the Department of Corrections for any sort of malfeasance or wrongdoing.
Well, he mentions, he doesn't use the word beat up, but he mentions prisoner.
I believe he says that they suited up on him.
That's right.
However, I think there is some misunderstanding of what suit up may mean, and I don't think there's any basis to say that that necessarily means that he's going to beat up the prisoner. Rather, when prison guards need to enter a cell with a noncompliant inmate, they do need to have protective suiting on to make sure they're not injured. So
I don't know that that was the context. It was being used as a transitive verb. I'm going to suit you up.
My understanding was that Mr. Bridges stated that the officers threatened to suit up and go into Mr. Poe's cell. So from that perspective, I think it's speculative to say that, that's showing some sort of problem with public policy or public concern, which is the standard for the public concern test.
No, what they say is other staff, this is the actual affidavit, which I've at long last found, other staff, including Officer Brown, Sergeant Hubrixy, whatever, and two white shirts then threatened to suit up on him. On him. I don't think you can possibly say this has anything to do with clothing.
Even if it's taken under the context of, say it is a threat, that they threatened Mr. Poe, that's still something that's very personal to Mr. Poe.
Are most prison grievances. I'm very troubled at your theory that prison grievances about things personal to the prison somehow don't count as protected speech when they are then recounted in affidavits before courts.
Indeed, on your theory, part of the First Amendment about petitioning for redress of grievances is essentially gone, because most grievances, most things for which you would write to Congress in search of private legislation, for example, are personal to you.
That's
what it means to have a grievance.
Absolutely, Your Honor. However, we're not talking about Mr. Bridges filing a grievance or Mr. Bridges filing a lawsuit.
Look, Prisoner A petitions the government via court for redress of grievances, and Petitioner B supports him. You're surely not saying that Congress could pass a law or Wisconsin could pass a law saying no prisoner can file an affidavit in any other prisoner's lawsuit because the only constitutional right involved is that of the prisoner who filed the lawsuit.
Absolutely not, Your Honor. There is a...
So the constitutional right to petition for redress of grievances includes the right to have somebody support your grievance.
Not under the case law of this circuit and of the Supreme Court. That was not addressed in
my... And of the Supreme Court? What decision of the Supreme Court says that you don't... If you have a constitutional right to petition for redress of grievances, but if anybody else supports it, they can be shot.
There is no decision that says that, Your Honor.
No decision of the Supreme Court holds that somebody who supports somebody else's petition for redress of grievances can be punished.
No, and that is not my position, Your Honor.
Yes, it is your position. Your position is that you can punish somebody who supports somebody else's personal grievance. That's the position you're taking in this litigation.
With respect, Your Honor, I do believe that under the public concern test, there is a distinction, just not blanket punishment.
The public concern test asks whether a grievance is private. I've given you an example of a private grievance. A goes to court and says, I've got this private grievance. They didn't pay me the minimum wage. And B supports it. The legal position you are taking is that B can be punished because A's grievance is private. Now, that may be right or it may be wrong, but it is your position, and it doesn't seem to me that trying to run away from it is going to help you.
No, Your Honor, and I am not trying to run away from it. Are there any further questions? I see my time is up. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, counsel. Anything further, Mr. Rosenblatt?
Very briefly, Your Honor.
I would just ask this court to clarify the confusion that seems to be surrounding this public concern test in the Seventh Circuit, with some district courts applying it, some district courts not mentioning it at all, and to rule that the public concern test does not apply to prisoner speech, especially in this context, and reverse the district court on that ground and the other grounds that were mentioned in our briefs and in the oral argument today. If you have any questions.
Well, thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement.